travel and trying to escape the futile. Who child is down to jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two stars. To adapt in the situation, who child. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungle is specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven fire from his lips. Burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom." And with all that, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening, interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. And also check out the Time for an Awakening Marketplace in our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things on the marketplace. Things seem like they're being added every other day. Language classes, economics courses, social systems, health classes, various topics taught by professors on both the continent and the diaspora. So check it out. Check out that marketplace on Time for Awakening and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Just go to timeforanawakening.com. Make that one of your favorites. That's timeforanawakening.com. We'll take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:09 in the city of Philadelphia, and it's Sunday evening. And I think this is the second week in a row. No, not the second week, but I think it's the second time this month. Rare occasion that we don't have a guest scheduled on Sunday. So the guest is the listening audience of Time for Awakening. Anything on your mind, you can give us a call. Myself or Brother Richard will throw out some topics. But we really like to exchange with the listening audience. And it's your opportunity tonight. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. 9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Streets, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother.
How are you, sir?
How you doing there? I'm doing good. It seems like a little slow Sunday, early evening, but everything is good. Got to get a little pepped up on the home front, but other than that, everything is good.
They had some things going on in the museum this weekend, wasn't it? Or was something coming up?
No, I don't know specifically what's coming up. I know I did a tour yesterday for a group from New Jersey, which was mixed age group, which was nice, always nice. You know, Elliot, it's always good to you find we really like our history if it's told to us. I mean, it really, you know, and I tell you, it doesn't even matter the age, but our people really, if we got a constant dose, I know in some cases people like feel good, but where we can, someone can ugly in a manner that really addresses what people instinctively know is the truth, we love it. You know, we really, really love it. And it's inspiring to, see that, over and over again. And maybe this is a select group of people, of people come to the museum because they truly, and this was like a mixed group, only making a reference to that, because sometimes we have family reunions and whatever, but they planned this, a group planning to come to a site that provides historical information, and they have young and old, I mean, even babies with them. And you share, our story from our context and make the connections between a then and now. They enjoy and see it. And one guy said, and I apologize for going off on it, but, that he never seen that the Civil War, as far as Africans, Black people fighting in the Civil War, was true. Me using the term, we're fighting liberation. He said, you know what? I never thought of it that way. I never seen it that way.
Wait a minute. Say that again. He never seen it as what did you say?
A fight for liberation. The African people weren't fighting to unify the states or fighting against the Confederacy.
Oh, so that narrative that they always talk about right. Okay. He never seen it that they had a separate mission. Okay. All right.
That's something. And we're not talking about a young gentleman. You know what I mean? That we don't interpret our experience coming here as that kind of liberation struggle. And I don't want to go on, because I kind of, open up, but it's at some point I like to even address this whole narrative that's being projected around 1619. I know we've been pushing the 400-year commemoration, they're calling it. Mm-hmm. But I think we really need to, I'm not saying question it, because there's a lot of different, but I think we need to really understand how the narrative is constructed, or at least, how some of us may be seeing it, how we want it constructed, and what's the benefit, who benefits from the narrative being constructed? Because I just see some interesting dynamics coming into being around that. So, maybe we can get into that later, among other things. And I hope the, Time for Awakening audience have other information they'd like to share in this here when we have this moment of open forum.
Richard, one question before we kind of just go off into some topics. You said it was a cross section of folks. So you, men and women, both young and old. Now, do you notice that? And this is just a question, that the people are really engaged, and I'm talking about both men and women, because when you're addressing them and taking them on tour, you're looking at their faces.
Right.
And you can tell whether people are distracted, whether they're just saying, well, I hope this guy gets over with this quick. you know, or whether they're really engaged.
Right.
And then when they ask the question, do you notice that they're really engaged and they ask a lot of questions or what? Just, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we have 45 minutes to an hour to go through three or four different exhibits.
Mm.
To your question specifically, you know, most of the time, and I'm going to be a little arrogant here, self-centered, because it does depend on the presenter, right? Most of the time for us as volunteers and docents, because most of us are passionate, people are engaged, you know, they're truly good. They may not, and they really don't ask many questions. Like you might get one or two that you know, you say something and clarify, but they don't ask many questions. But believe me, Elliot, I mean, on all the tours that I've done, you know, at the museum and years that I've done them, most of the time, it doesn't matter the age group, they are engaged. I mean, some will be like spellbound because they never heard it before.
Okay.
And one thing that shocks them, and when we have different art exhibits and, we, you know, because they're culturally relevant, we try to tie the historical narrative. And I noticed that every time that we're at a certain point in our tour, we have four, on the top one, it's across our, the museum was developed in 1976, right? Later on, you know, they put the federal prison across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is in the city. They have a federal prison right across the street from the African American Museum. And every time I point that out, people are like, you know, because we're talking from being the point of enslavement to now, and then to end with seeing the prison across the street, it reinforces something to.
Yeah, because I mean, and keep in mind, Richard, during that period that you're talking about, you had African American leaders in the city,
right?
And you were right down there where the Declaration of Independence and all that stuff was written. They got a Jewish museum down there now. You got a lot of stuff,
right?
But that prison was built directly across the street because the museum came first. The prison was second, built directly across the street.
And they wanted to move the museum. You know, that was before the prison was built. They wanted the museum gone because it is in the downtown district, in the historical district.
Mm-hmm.
But the politics of the museum prevailed. And it stayed in the center city area, in the historical district area. But yeah, I did, you know, that's just to reemphasize the point you're raising about, you know, people's interests and the intent that, you know, it really resonates with them, the then, you know, historically speaking, and the now, you know, in relation to captivity.
You know, when that scripture that I quote at the beginnings of all of the programs, that our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. I mean, if you look around, that don't fit any other nationality on the face of this earth beside our people, because we don't know, and sometimes we don't even consider. I think there's another scripture in there that says, the ox knoweth his owner, the ass his master's crib. My people don't know, and they don't consider. I'll pull that up. Because those verses, they don't fit so-called Jewish people. They don't fit anybody else. Those passages fit our people. Some of our people don't know their history, and they don't consider or don't care. But in order to move forward, we have to know our history, the mistakes we made, and the successes that we had. Because any successes we had was always countered by the system that we live under and the people that run that system. But you don't know that unless you search. That's why I'm glad that we did those things in this ongoing, whether Dr. Rogers did it, on the Reconstruction. Because it was really necessary after our people had that victory in that Civil War, not to save this Union. That was Lincoln's objective. But to free themselves, then they wanted, like you said, when we read over those things, they wanted to be left alone and they wanted to live separately from Europeans. That was what they said. But we see what happened.
Of being able to take, making that strategic decision, you know, show the success of being able to govern. I mean, those things are really powerful.
Well, you know, listen, right after that Civil War, this country was in disarray. And they almost had to come and appeal to black folks. The South was in disarray. The government was in disarray because, you know, they wanted a union, but it was no union at that time. They were trying to repair the union. And we were standing in the middle, so to speak.
Right.
So they had to address it. It wasn't that what they couldn't ignore our ancestors during that period. They had to address it, even though we see what happened 10 to 12 years later.
I don't want, you know, you spark a thought when you say that, because as you were saying that, Ellie, I was thinking about, you know, the white abolitionists, or what they would call the liberals, right? When you say about 10 or 12 years later, because, you know, for white abolitionists, you know, in the political context, right? You know, they're against the view of what supposedly the American capitalist system is supposed to be about. And the white abolitionists were, pushing for the elimination of slavery. But, you know, the thing that strikes me that is interesting is that though they were pushing for the elimination of slavery, it wasn't still the same thing as fighting for the liberation of yourself as a people. And that fraction came up. And as you said, it came up in that decision, the political decision, with white, white abolitionists, North and South involved, to support the removal of Union troops that left the black development in the South, the black governance that was occurring, the black economic development, the black social development, the black educational development, left it back in the hands, you know. And we can't, somebody else in the listening audience, or maybe you may disagree with me, but we can't leave those liberals off the hook, that their decision not to be tenacious in their supposedly defense or support of African liberation, shows itself by them allowing for political expedience the, you know, removal of their troops after we, you know, fought, you know, out of our interest, but fought to save this Union. You know, I just, because now we're having that same kind of discussion around these parties and whether, to what extent will they go to support, you know, African people, you know, they codify it now, you know, whether it be wealth transfer or economic transfer, or, you know, the elimination of racism, or any of those symbols they put out there. But I think there is a line that we have to, you know, continue to keep in mind, that those white liberals may have been supportive, but that's only to a degree when it gets down to a choice they got to make, an uncomfortable choice they got to make. You know, I just thought to raise that.
Yeah, well, you know, kind of looking back at that situation, Richard, I don't think, and you never had any of the so-called white liberal abolitionist opinions on this, at least written that I've seen. But I don't think that they really thought that blacks, and this is whites as a whole, during that period, whether they was conservative or liberal, they underestimated the resolve of our ancestors.
Yes.
During the war and after the war. Because the advances of our people in just that short period of time, it caught Europeans off guard. And that's both of them. That's right. Why they were involved as a bipartisan agreement, so to speak, to stop this reconstruction.
Right.
On both sides.
Right.
They underestimated the resolve of our ancestors. And you could see the advances we were making among ourselves to right our situation and to get ourselves on our feet that they agreed it had to be stopped. Because whether you were, and I'll use these modern terms, liberal or conservative, they still believed that it was a European country.
Right.
And they should make the decisions. You know, that's a little different than it's a melting pot and everybody's, you know, whether you're conservative or liberal, in the back of their mind and sometime in the front of their mind, they really believe that they should make the decisions that you should follow or other people should follow. Look at the United States policies around the world. No matter what they say, they want to make the decisions for everyone else.
Right.
And it's no different here. No different. Look at, Richard, look at the old neighborhood of South Philadelphia and where they're moving at in your area. Now, the people that are moving down there, they're not flag-waving conservative or Klan members. They're supposed to be liberal whites. Mm-hmm. Supposedly. But you see their attitudes once they come into your areas. It's the same as their quote-unquote brethren. They want to change names of landmarks. Whether you had religious institutions in the area, they want you out. They basically want you out. So, you know,
they have a better way of God. They see based off of what they're coming into, and they're coming into the transition. So they're comparing way things look and the way things are being that they're buying into. That you don't have the right way of governing, because if you would, it wouldn't be looking like that, and we wouldn't be rescuing this community by having all this development going on and us being able to come in and afford these $200,000-$600,000 homes. So obviously, you don't know how to govern the area, you know, because you were here at that time. And I would like to add, Elliot, one thing that I do see in the symbolism around me, not knowing the people, because it's interesting for me to be a part of this transition, because it's interesting to me to see how many American flags get waved. I mean, they had big ones coming out. They went, some of these houses are two stories. I'm not kidding, Elliot. They got this big American flag hanging out the window. You know what I'm saying? Like, now that's interesting. Because to me, that's just like when you go into an occupied territory, what is the first thing you put down?
A flag.
Mm-hmm. I'm not joking, Elliot. I'm serious. I'm noticing in these houses, I mean, it ain't like rows, but I'm, you know, whoever it moved in, they feel they have to place a marker to let everybody know this is America, you know, this is American territory now. And it's them big flags that fly, you know, flowing out the way. And we ain't talking down Memorial Day either. We talking every day. Now, if you would have seen, imagine what the language that would have been created if the red, black, and green flag was hoisted all over our neighborhood.
Yeah, well, you know the answer to that, Richard. Yeah, you know.
It's just interesting, you know, what we're talking about, because it is about I'm in this discussion group, and the discussion that we were dealing with is the question, you know, some people are questioning, should we say white supremacy? But as you said, and the G7 meeting is going on, had gone on this weekend, we're talking about white hegemony, white hegemony. And they're not willing to give that up. They make maybe good liberals, but they're not willing to give up white hegemony. No matter who they got to bring in under the banner of whiteness, you know, in the end, it's still about white, you know, European ancestry, Euro-Slavic ancestry.
Yeah, exactly.
You should be in control.
You have, exactly. You have to conform. You have to conform. No matter, you know, whether you're conservative, a liberal, I got black friends, whatever. You have to conform to their way of doing things, whether it's in a job site, whether it's in your school, anything, any strata of life, you're supposed to conform. And you especially see it now. Women going these jobs, natural hairstyles is not tolerated, especially so-called professional settings. Schools, a lot of these young guys now, they're wearing all types of styles. They're not accepted. You have to conform. They want you to conform. So, you know, these things stare our people right in the face. We have to, Brother Mbata on Friday talking about setting up these, and we have been talking about it before, think tanks in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
We got to come up with plans and strategy. In fact, I'm going to talk about something a little bit later, probably before the first break, about something I wanted to touch on during this program when we talk about other people making plans. About our folks, some of our people don't seem to realize it until they see you get hit over the head or smacked in the face, and then you think these things haven't been planned all along. But we'll talk, because I want to get to that. Richard, you put an interesting article on the Time for Awakening website earlier in the week, and it came from the Washington Monthly, and it was 2 years ago, the article. The number of black-owned businesses has plummeted since 1970. And it was interesting. It was a lengthy article, but I just want to focus in on a couple of things here in that article to kind of start the conversation off, because the title of the article is "The Number of Black-Owned Businesses Has Plummeted Since 1970. Here's Why." And it says here, "The tradition continues today. Last June, Black Enterprise Magazine marks its 44th anniversary of the Black Enterprise 100s, the magazine's annual rankings of the nation's top 100 black businesses. At the top of the list stood Worldwide Technology, which since its founding in 1990 has grown into a global firm with more than $7 billion in revenue and 3,000 employees. Then came the Radio One, whose 55 radio stations fan out among 16 markets. The combined revenues of BE's Black Enterprises 100s, which includes Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Productions, now totals more than $24 billion, a nine-fold increase since 1973, adjusting with inflation. A closer look at those numbers, however, reveal that the pioneering companies are the exception to a far more alarming trend. The last 30 years also have brought a wholesale collapse of black-owned independent businesses and financial institutions that once anchored black communities across the country. In 1985, 60 black-owned banks were providing financial services to their communities. Today, just 23 remain. In 11 states that headquartered black-owned banks in 1994, not a single one is in business. The 50 black-owned insurance companies that operated during the 1980s to today, just two remain. Over the same period, tens of thousands of black-owned retail establishments and local service companies also have disappeared, having gone out of business or been acquired by larger companies. Reflecting these developments, working-age black Americans have become far less likely to be their own boss in the 1990s. The per capita number of black employers, for example, declined by some 12% between 1997 and 2014. But the decline in entrepreneurship and business ownership among blacks also is a concern. One reason is that it is largely reflected, largely reflects not the opening of new avenues of upward mobility, but rather foreclosing the opportunities. Rates of business ownership and entrepreneurship are falling among black citizens. Large retailers and financial institutions compromise even a bigger slice of the national economy, and the possibility of starting and maintaining an independent business has dropped. The decline of black-owned independent businesses traces to many causes, but a major one that has been little noted was the decline in enforcement of anti-monopoly and fair trade laws beginning in the late 70s. Under both Democratic and Republican administrations, the change has hurt all independent businesses, but effects have disproportionately hit black business owners. Marcellus Andrews, Bucknell University's professor of economics, says that pulling back of anti-monopoly enforcement has had a catastrophic effect on black-owned businesses. And the presumed price of advantage of concentration often does not translate into better economic opportunities. So, Richard,
yeah,
you see from that article, according to the writer of the article, when he talked about a lot of different factors, he said here, but a major one that is little noted is the decline in enforcement of fair trade laws beginning in the late 70s under both Democratic and Republican administrations. So, I mean, you know, that kind of goes back to what you were talking about earlier. It goes right back to that. The chair was pulled out from among black people and their businesses by both Democratic and Republican administrations. If you look at the decline, and it says, this beginning of the article that says since 1970, black businesses has plummeted. It doesn't say declined, because you can see a gradual decline or a slight decline. It says plummeted. So that means it's almost like somebody been pushed off a cliff. A rapid drop, which means plummeted. So if you look at some of these other businesses, if you're talking about Asian, these Latinos that have influx came into our communities, Indian businesses, you don't see that as described as plummeting. Those businesses are increasing, and very rapidly, especially in our communities. So you can see here that that's tied to some type of political involvement, Richard.
On that side of the ledger.
Yeah.
And the weakness of the social capital on our side of the ledger. And what I mean about social capital is, you said, that network, that social, because you have to have, you know, what you'll see in other ethnic groups is that network and the nimbleness, because those groups you mentioned, they don't have, no white people have. And in that article, it said, by changing the rules about monopolies, right? So that gave, as far as being able to expand and buy into these industries that blacks, these companies that blacks owned, you know, radio markets itself, without any interference, they were able to do that. So, but because our social network of the capital that we do have wasn't nimble enough to move into other areas. I mean, you know, we hear Scotty talk about with Black Talk Radio, you know, the need for, you know, the infusion. And we talk about the point of where if the Black Capital seen that new communication outlet and then seen the data coming from India of what is one of the biggest exposed to the market, Black market, wouldn't you think that they'd be beating down his door to get there?
Yeah, yeah.
But are they? Because the network doesn't exist for them to see that that's what they should be doing. And I think that was deliberately, that social network, because what they'll try to do is buy into, on the other side of the ledger, would be Jay-Z and the NFL. Now, would you want to build a market, a network that builds a market that is your natural market, or you want to try to get infused into a market that you were really a peon in, plus, again, the social capital, because them guys just sat around a year ago. They got an order from the president. They had a caucus in order not to allow not just one football player to play. Now, these are businessmen that has to deal with the bottom line. But they sat at a table. That's called a social network. That's a social capital. And made a decision and threatened all the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And picked others to kind of go against some of the other ones. That's the same strategy that they always use.
And it's because they see the thing is, yes, you know, the thing about what I'm speaking of is the organizational, you know, what we talked about before, because that's an undergirding value that we should be in control. We're not going to be competing with you. Once you show that you're showing, and yes, we have the wealth to do that because we have created the pyramid where we got all of this surplus labor that creates wealth for us, or surplus consumer that creates wealth for us in order to for us to make the decision who's going to be let in and who's not. So social capital and wealth, you know, I would argue the capital or the network, wealth, as far as in ownership of things, is an outgrowth of the network, not the because the network is an outgrowth of the wealth. Because when we go back to the origin of this country, supposedly, it was out of the networks of the pirates and the kings in order for them to create the colonies that they created in order to be able to deal with the wealth and the new capital, which is the human trafficking of African as property.
You know, and going back to this article about the business, Richard, and you talked about the will of our people. You know, I don't think it has changed that much. And in fact, I don't think it has changed at all that Black folks want to go into business. I think what has broken them to a certain extent is not being able to. And when I say not being able to, if you flip the script and look at these other nationalities, including whites, if they want to go into business, they generally don't use their own money. And that's usually the rule among whites. They use other people's money. They can easily go to the bank and get loans. And if their business fail, they can go back and get another loan. Sometimes whites, their business might fail 2 and 3 times before they hit so-called pay dirt. But blacks, on the other hand, if you luck up and get a business loan, you barely get enough to survive, and you better not fail. or you that idea is going by the boards, and you better try to find a job. So it's difficult for blacks to go into business. They don't get the political, because you need, listen, it's you need political help to get into business, Richard. Whether it's to get the licenses, sometimes the bondings, the insurances, if it entails that, the zonings. You need political help. These other people get the political help. They get zoning changes, laws. You see now a lot of these Korean businesses that had plexiglass up, and I'm talking about Philadelphia now, that had plexiglass up, that was selling fortified liquors and beers and all that stuff. You find out, it leaks out, that they was never supposed to put that type of stuff up. And if they were selling alcohol, they're supposed to have facilities in there for people to sit down. You remember that was stated, Richard?
Yep.
So the question is, how did they get around this? How were they able to do this? See, all of this stuff was political. Those concessions wasn't made for your businesses and by black elected officials, especially here in Philadelphia. They were made for other people. And they don't have enough heart, enough gall to stand up for their own and call a spade a spade. I want to, go ahead, because I want to play this clip. And it's from 2005, to be honest. I think it was 2005. Of Marion Barry. Now, you know, you had black elected officials that stood up for their communities. Even though Marion Barry had his flaws, he did stand up for his community financially, which was his responsibility, being that he was elected official. He knew that in that office, he needed to stand up for black people and make sure they get a slice of this pie. Just like I was saying before, black people pay taxes in their neighborhoods, and the tax money should go towards the community to develop businesses and things of that nature. He knew that. I want to read something, and then I'm going to play a clip about his feelings towards a trend that was happening then. Keep in mind, this was 2004 or 5. This article is from the Washington Post, and it's dated this is dated April 5th, 2012. But this is when he won re-election. Now, let me just read a little bit of this, and I'm going to play a clip. It says, Marion Barry apologizes for anti-Asian remarks. Faced with a torrent of criticism from his colleagues and other city residents, Marion Barry apologized Thursday afternoon for his election day suggestion that Asian business owners in his ward ought to go. These are Barry's comments. I admit I should have used and said things differently, but the facts are still very present in our daily lives here, he tweeted. We are tired of substandard treatment, tired of being kept at arm's length and distance, and tired of the lack of community engagement. Barry said in a telephone interview that the apology was heartfelt, but it was solid as Marion Barry can make it and believe it, because I have a history of not doing anything to purposely disparage any group or people. Marion Barry is mostly refusing to back down from the comments he made on Tuesday that Asian business owners in his community have to go. Barry made comments Tuesday night at a party celebrating his landslide victory in the Democratic primary race for D.C. council seat that he's held since 2005. WRC-TV cameras caught the remarks, and they quote him here. We've got to do something about these Asians coming in, opening up businesses, those dirty shops, they ought to go. I'll just say right now, you know, but we need African-American businesses to be able to take their place. On Facebook Wednesday, outcry demanding that Barry apologize to the Asian community. By 1 p.m., more than 72 likes. One of the D.C. Council colleagues, Tommy Wells of the 6th Ward, took to Twitter late Wednesday to decry the remarks as deplorable. 5 suburban Maryland lawmakers of Asian descent, Democrats Sam Akora, Kumar, I can't pronounce some of these names, all called on Barry to apologize. At best, Barry's attack on Asian Americans is deeply troubling, and at worst, it's race baiting, they said in statements. Barry isn't apologizing. Rather, he said in an interview, he suggests his critics get to know Marion Barry and his stellar record on fighting for rights. I've spent more than 50 years of my life fighting for justice and equality for my people, he said. Those 5 people don't know Marion Barry at all. They just know my name. They don't know my record. Barry renewed his critique of Asian-owned businesses. Let me be clear. I'm not castigating any people. I'm not doing anything except trying to have a renaissance of our community and get some respect. A number of these restaurants serve high-caloric food, bad food, etc. But the more important thing is they don't participate in the community. That's what I object to. They don't care, and I don't care who it is. Now, that was his comments, Richard, as an elected official.
Right.
Now, let me, I want just want to play a clip to kind of double down what he had made mention of. And let me cue that up.
First of all, these people don't know Marion Barry's record. Don't know my commitment to justice and injustice in Washington, all over the country. 50 years have been fighting. You know, I get strong support from the Asian community.
Anything else you want to say? Any other message you want to send to these shop owners that you were talking about?
Get busy. Hire some D.C. residents, some Ward 8 residents. Clean your stores up. Those who need them cleaned up. Be a part of the community. Don't take all that money to Virginia or Maryland. Leave some of it right here in this community. We want it, and we're going to demand it.
You're not going to officially retract. You, as far as you're concerned, you've already apologized, and that's the end of it?
I've done everything I'm going to do, and I've made my position clear. We're not going to take this disrespect from anybody, black, white, Hispanic, anybody else.
All right.
Richard, now this is after he kind of fell from grace, so to speak, and ran for election and got his seat back.
Right.
And he made those statements. Now, it's a reality of what he's saying. Now, he admitted that he could have used different language. But the reality exists to what he has stated. But yeah, you don't hear other elected officials saying these things or saying anything similar. They double down on supporting these businesses like this. And now, since maybe the past 5 years, especially in Philadelphia, you see a huge influx of Latino businesses in black communities. Prior to that, Richard, years ago, those businesses stayed in the Hispanic neighborhoods in Philadelphia. And it's fair. I mean, you're supposed to control the economics of your community. But now those businesses have ventured out and moved into black communities. And it's 2 or 3 of them almost seem like on every block.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely one in every block. So where's the responsibility of the elected officials to at least develop the economic base in their community? The will doesn't seem to be there. And if that's the case, then we have to develop, similar to what the brother talked about on Friday's program, have to develop candidates in our communities that follow planks and platforms of what we dictate, not the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, what the community dictates that they follow, and then move forward. And it can be done. It is being done in certain areas, in isolated areas, and they make sure you don't know about it, but it is being done.
Yeah, and it, I mean, and that's the you know, those people assemblies, or, you know, the looking at it from proportional representation in relationship to, you know, how the government tax money that goes out of the community, how it should come back in order to address the economic and social needs of the people in that geographic area. I think that that's, you know, is important to phrase it, is that, you know, when we're in a geographical area, we should be controlling, and we should be, through that process, be selecting the type of leadership that assists in controlling and dictating how the resources, the public resources, where they come from, should be directed. But that is some type of understanding. I mean, can you agree, Ellie? I mean, doesn't everybody have to have a certain type of understanding? And again, going back to, you know, when, you know, getting that piece of the coming out of Reconstruction, it's obvious when those leaders spoke, they didn't just speak for themselves when they said we'd rather be to ourselves, build up our economic, you know, relationship. And what you've seen was the outcome of that. Obviously, they wasn't just speaking for themselves. They were truly representing, you know, people that lived around them. Adam was ministers. You know, these guys today, and the men and women, they don't represent the people that, if they live around them anymore. Now, I know you got to live in a certain district in order to run for the district, but that don't mean anything. So I don't see the mindset of the people, you know, in our community saying these are the type of representatives we need to have in order to get control over the dollars and cents that we send out or is directed to our community. And that may be why you constantly say it's about information, because they don't know that, or maybe we don't know that.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation, and you can get involved. We're in open forum this evening on Time for an Awakening. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. When we come back from break, Richard, this article that I talked about Friday, I want to share it with the listening audience to give them some perspective and background. We see that the Jewish community is coming after the two women, Rashida Tlaib and Omar Alon, for their stance in reference to supporting BDS and their stance against Israel occupation of Palestine, their policy, period, Israel policy. And we see that they've had remarks against both of them in media people, politicians, a talk show host that has a program on Bill Maher. Yeah, I mean, you've heard different Jewish voices come out against these two women, and especially those two, because they've been the most vocal about it. I want to share an article with the listening audience after the break that we need to really keep an eye on. Again, we'll do that after the break. You can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be wrecked, if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery. slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I say that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple. It really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. there's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. It's a time for an awakening. It's 8:16 in the city of Philadelphia. And we're in open forum this evening. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. You're the special guest this evening. And you can reach us by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 to throw something into the mix. Richard.
Yes.
If you remember that program that we did maybe about 4 weeks ago when we talked about Trump's comments on the representative out of Baltimore about the community being in the shape it was in. And then we kind of flipped the script and talked about the money that both Democrat and Republican administrations had sent to these cities, supposedly earmarked for African-Americans and to develop African-American businesses, but no businesses ever get developed. You know, what happens to this money? And a lot of these cities that it was sent to, black folks are in control to a certain extent, have access to monies and to kind of dictate where certain money goes. I'm not under the illusion that they're in control in any of these cities. But, you remember we talked about that,
right?
And talked about the influence that other communities exert over African Americans to develop the term I use, Manchurian candidates. Let me read, because we see Jewish leaders now make a concerted effort to make statements in the press about Rashida Tlaib from Michigan and Ilhan Omar. I think she's from Minnesota, Richard, if I'm not mistaken. Right. I don't have it in front of me.
Right.
Now, both of these women are members of the Black Caucus. And the sound coming from the Black Caucus is deafening. I don't hear anything. Maybe you have heard something, Richard.
No.
Where they've objected to the attack on these women. I haven't heard anything. Now, let me read this here, because I want us to keep in mind that the most vocal one that refused to sign that letter, and the Jewish community, according to Cynthia McKinney, loves to put letters in front of you that you sign. She talked on our program. We was on terrestrial radio at the time, myself and Brother Richard, and told us about the letter that's before all the Black Caucus that they had to sign. When she refused to sign it, they wanted her out, and they got her out. They put a letter in front of Rashida Tlaib to sign, saying that she wouldn't be a vocal critic against Israel and speak in favor of the BDS movement, and she refused. Now, let me read, because I want to read to you something, and I shared with you that article, Richard. It was in the Detroit Metro, but then the article is not there anymore. If you try to click on that link, it's down. It's no longer there. The article that I shared with you the other day, that's no longer there. But I did find the article in this Palestinian, it's called the Palestinian Portal. And I'll share that article with the listening audience. But first, I want to give you a little background. I want to read this article. I want our people to pay kind of close attention to who is mentioned in this article and where they're from. Now, this article is from February of 2014. And it's entitled, From Small Town Mayor to Pro-Israel Congresswoman. Now, this article is out of the Times of Israel, a publication called the Times of Israel. And it's entitled, From Small Town Mayor to Pro-Israel Congresswoman. A pro-Israel group brought Martha Fudge, she's a black congresswoman, to Israel when she was still the mayor of Warrensville Heights, Ohio. Today she heads the Congressional Black Caucus. Now that was then. Keep in mind this article is from 2014. 6 years ago, it's 2008, that's when Obama went in. 6 years ago, Martha Fudge was a mayor of a small town, overwhelmingly African-American, in northern Ohio when she came to Israel at the invitation of AIPAC affiliate American Israeli Education Foundation this week. She returned as a congresswoman and the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus and is a vowed supporter of the Jewish state. I've been impressed, obviously, with what Israel has done over the years. It has related to technology, agriculture, research in general, Fudge said, a lifelong Democrat, told the Times of Israel Wednesday evening, right after she and several others from the caucus concluded a meeting with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem. I find the country fascinating and certainly want to learn more about it. These are comments by Martha Fudge. Of course, there are good reasons. Of course, there are good and bad things in every country, says Fudge. But she hasn't found anything she dislikes about Israel yet. I know there are some things that need to be addressed. And the leaders that I've talked to all admit that they need to be addressed, she said, apparently referring to the Palestinian issue and questions regarding the civil rights infringements of Israeli Arabs. It's something that is a fact, no different than the changes that have come about in the United States over the past 30 years. Change happens, and I just hope that it will be sooner than later. In the early days of Fudge's political career, contained very little to indicate that she would one day become a close friend of Israel. A lawyer by training, in 2000, she became the mayor of Cleveland, of a Cleveland suburb, Warrensville Heights. 93% of population is black. 8 years later, when she is still the mayor of the town with no Jews or Israelis in it, the AIEF invited her to come to visit the Holy Land. In August 19, 2008, the congresswoman of Ohio's 11th district, Stephanie Tubbs Jones, suffered a cerebral hemorrhage and died the next day. Local Democratic leaders elected Fudge to be her successor, and since then she's won every campaign she's campaigned in. During this week's trip to Israel, Fudge and other members of the Congressional Black Caucus also met with Palestinian Authority Prime Minister Rami Hadala, Israeli Arabs, and civil society activists. I've learned an awful lot, she says. With Netanyahu, Fudge says she spoke mostly about Iranian nuclear program and the prime minister's apparent resistance to the temptation to talk to her about using her political power to put pressure on Iran. He did not say that Congress should insist on more sanctions against Iran. All we discussed was the fact that the problem is not just an Israeli problem. It's a problem of the entire Middle East. A lot of people have responsibility other than Israel and the United States. So we talked about a broader framework that would happen in the entire area. In fact, Iran were to get the nuclear capabilities, it would be dangerous. Um, with Netanyahu, Fudge also discussed the current peace negotiations. She did not get the impression that the leaders on both sides were dragging their feet because she wasn't ready to make, they aren't ready to make the necessary concessions, she asserted. I'm going home with a sense of optimism. I know there are a lot of major issues that need to be addressed, but both parties want it to happen. I'm hopeful that they'll find a way to make it happen. Fudge says that she has yet to meet an African American who isn't sympathetic to Israel. I can't speak for the entire black community, says Fudge in the United States, but I would suggest to you that as within any group of people, you're going to have those who are supportive and those who are not. I don't happen to be in contact with those who are not supportive of Israel. Those of us who are here are supportive. We all see things we wish might be different, but overall we're supportive. African Americans in Israel have a naturally good relationship, says Fudge. There's always been a natural kind of bond, so I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Richard. Now, this woman has been courted ever since she was a small town mayor of Warrensville Heights, a town of 93% blacks. According to this article from a Jewish paper, no Jews live in that city. But they managed to bring her to Israel, show her around, and now she's a powerful congressperson. At that time, she was head of the Black Caucus. You heard her comments, according to quotes here. She said, and I'll repeat it for the listening audience. Fudge says that she's yet to meet an African American who isn't sympathetic to Israel. I can't speak for the entire black community in the United States, but I would suggest to you that as a group of people, you're going to have people that are supportive and those that are not. I don't happen to be in contact with those that are not. Those that are here are supportive, and we all see things that might be different, but we're overall supportive. Richard, she said that she don't know of any black people that are not supportive of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not in contact with any of them. But I mean, does that show a disconnect with the community? Where does she live on Mars?
Mm-hmm.
These are people that represent black folks. Do you hear? I want the listening audience to hear some of the crap that's coming out of their mouths. Well, what the hell is the matter? We got to listen. Black people can sit on their behind all they want and just complain. You got to get these people out from in front of you. They're dangerous. Do you hear the comments made by this woman, Richard? Now, wait a minute. I just want to say this before I'm going to let you chime in here. At this time, she was head of the Black Caucus in a meteoric rise because she, 8 years, 5 years before that, 6 years before that, she was the mayor of a small town, Warrensville Heights. Now, let me tell you where she is now. She's on, and it's a Democratic majority on this House Subcommittee on Agriculture, which has oversight, nutrition and department operations. It's a black majority on this House Committee on Agriculture, and she sits there. I think she was one of the chairs. No, she was a chair. She's not now, but she's a powerful member of this subcommittee. And it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 blacks that sits on this committee of the majority Democratic subcommittee that's over this House of Agriculture committee. David Scott of Georgia, Martha Fudge of Ohio, Stacy Pascal, Vermont, Alma Adams, who's the vice chair at North Carolina, Johanna Hayes, I look like from Connecticut, Antonio Delgado of New York, and Al Lawson, Representative Al Lawson from Florida. Now, they sit on this subcommittee along with this woman, Fudge Richard. And last I heard, the lawsuit against the federal government and the USDA black farmers hadn't gotten paid and hadn't been satisfied, even though the lawsuit was for $1.5 billion, which the government lost. We just talked to farmers not too long ago that were suffering discrimination from this multi-billion dollar company that does huge business, that is a global conglomerate based in the United States, that sold fake seed to African-American farmers. We just talked farming about a month ago, which is Cook Foods, a $1 billion company, third largest in this country, that does business internationally, that made a concerted effort to drive black farmers out of business. Where's the comments from these blacks that sit on this subcommittee, Richard? They supposedly hold influence. They're in a Democratic majority on this committee. I haven't heard any statement from them in reference to the complaints of these black farmers or about black farmers, period.
Mm-mm.
And she sits on this committee, a powerful member, used to be the head of the Black Caucus, but a friend and a mouthpiece for the Nation of Israel, a foreign government, as far as from what I understand. Maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. The government considered them an ally, but they're still a foreign government. Now, yep. Before I read this article on Tlaib, go ahead, because I know you wanted to say something. I kind of cut you off.
It's so much to unpack in that. Let's hear how, because you make a powerful point in relationship to the concern that really focused the interests of black people compared to a Congress. You know, usually foreign policy is directed towards the Senate as far as consideration, but the Black Caucus and their concern, especially with only one country. But, I mean, at the same time, we know, and that's I think we really have to continue to unpack as far as APAC. Being able to, one, have the amount of funds, because APEC finances these trips.
Mm, certainly they do.
You know, so that means they have enough funds to be able to support. I mean, this last trip, they financed the Democratic and the Republican Offshman Congress to go. So, I mean, you know, we have to, I'm kind of, always asking, like, well, when we look on the black side of the chessboard, what kind of entity, even if the economy of scale is different, what kind of entity do we have that comes close to lobbying to that kind of degree? Because that's what it is, right? It's still lobbying, you know, in order to, and what's the payoff? Well, $3 billion out of the American Treasury seems a good enough payoff. And if we broke down her district that she got elected by, how much in dollars for each constituent goes to that $3 billion that isn't being directed into her constituent base or to the committee she represents, you know, on that farm committee.
Well, you know,
as far as, again,
yeah, well, you know,
I think it's a natural constituency.
You know, none of those dollars is directed towards community.
Right.
But the thing is, that's how they play politics, and especially Europeans. This is a European style politics. Everything is centered around money and influence and who I can buy. Mm-hmm. See, but we're here. We don't need to have the same mentality as Europeans. That's what we're talking about, a mindset change. Malcolm talked about it in that clip we just played. These people that get in these offices should have tunnel vision to focus on the reclamation of their people, not playing political games, not wanting more money so they can stay in office and be in office for life, not have a political job. Their focus should be on helping their community. And if you're in there 4 years, do as much as you can and pass the baton to somebody else. Not be bought and paid. These people know they can buy and pay for these people, these black elected officials. I don't care what they do with other European officials. That's what they play these games. But when our people play these games, it's a dangerous game because we always lose. Sometimes it's a win-win situation for these Caucasians. Some of them lose, but then they win in the end. It's almost like a tug of war. You win, and it almost like a wrestling, the old style wrestling. This week you win, next week I win. But with black folks, we're always the loser. And even ones that play games with them, they end up being a loser. We see it now all the time. But we've seen where they're cultivating. They're going to these areas all over the country. According to a published report that we shared on the program about 4 weeks ago, getting council people, state representatives. You remember that, Richard?
Yeah.
And taking them to Israel, courting them to where they could come back and make stupid statements like this woman talking about she's never encountered anybody that's not in support of Israel. She was the mayor of a town of 93% black people. Are you not in touch with the people that you're talking to, your own constituents, where you would make a dumbass statement like that? Now, let me read, because that article that I tried to share with you the other day, Richard, all of a sudden, when you tried to pull it up on the Detroit Metro, it was taken down. So I found it on another site, and now that's taken down. But I found the article on this Palestinian portal, and I want to share it with the listening audience. It's called Shocking Report on Leading Jews' Effort to Defeat Rashida Tlaib. In recent days, a shocking report about powerful Detroit Jews using money to try to defeat Rashida Tlaib, Representative Rashida Tlaib, has been circulating on the web. And Tlaib says that the attitudes in the story are evidence of hate and the humanization of Palestinians. Now, they're not saying that the article is not true. Now, keep in mind, Richard, that Detroit is a city of 93% black folks. 83%, I'm sorry, according to the last figures I've seen. 83% African-American population. Ron Campius of the Jewish Telegraph Agency reported on a gathering of Jewish power brokers in Detroit last week, arranged by a leading Jewish organization, at which they vowed to raise money to get rid of Tlaib because of her support for the boycott of Israel. Tlaib is a Muslim woman of color and Palestinian American. Commentary at the meeting included race-tinged language, one person saying the darker one is, the more right they're perceived to be. Tlaib responded to the story on Twitter. This type of hate never succeeds when the truth is on our side. Palestinians are dehumanized. Those who want to suppress the truth by trying to discredit me can bring it. My grandmother in Palestine taught me of the days where everyone lived side by side in peace, and what is right, and what is what I want, and that's what I want to fight for. I'm sorry. Laura Friedman of the Foundation for Middle East Peace points out in the views expressed by the organizational Jewish Democrats, we will fulfill the worst ideas that people have about Jews. If someone has speculated that these were the views rather than reporting what people said publicly, they'd be accused of anti-Semitism. Here is the Jewish Telegraph's article, The Meeting of Semi-Officials, put together by a branch of the largest Jewish organization in a U.S. Campisi says. Let me skip down a little bit here. David Kurtzman of the local Jewish Federation set up for me a roundtable with a diverse array of major donors, lay and professional leaders, and folks who have been deeply involved in the community. The roundtable took place in the Jewish Federation offices in suburban Bloomfield Hills, a suburb of Detroit. But everyone spoke in a professional capacity and not on behalf of the group. So the leading Jewish organization has its fingerprints all over this. In the Jewish Federation roundtable, there was a consensus. The Palestinian freshman in the 13th district, Tlaib, has to go. Some direct statements at the meeting. We are in this community and we'll go against Rashida Tlaib, says Lisa Liss, a philanthropist who is also a contributor to Democratic candidates and who otherwise during the roundtable was vocal in her criticism of Donald Trump. There were nods around the table. I was told that there has already been outreach to Brenda Jones, the Detroit City Council president, whom Tlaib defeated in last year's primary, and who is considering another run. I was also told that pro-Israel folks are already stocking money away to target Tlaib. The pawnbrokers believe they can manipulate Detroit's black community. The thinking in the room was that African-American community in the 13th district award will coalesce around a single candidate, likely Brenda Jones, and that candidate would draw pro-Israel support. Rabbi Alana Albert, is the white woman here, who was not part of the roundtable, told me that taking aim at Tlaib would be catastrophic if it fails for Jewish community relations and for the issue that more than any other keeps Jewish community leaders awake. This issue, more than any other, will help keep Jewish community leaders awake and keep younger Jews engaged. So we see here, Richard, what's going on in Detroit. Let me read this last paragraph here. It must be, according to sources who are plotting in opposition to Tlaib, don't dwell in Detroit or Tlaib's district, because the article suggests that conservatives who dwell in Detroit's rich suburbs, that's among the many articles' most outrageous elements. I used to be instructed that they had already been outreach to Brenda Jones, the black Detroit Metropolis Council president, whom Tlaib defeated in last year's election and is contemplating another run. I've been additionally instructed that pro-Israel people have already stocked away cash to provide to Brenda Jones in order to run. So, Richard, you see that other communities, and we talked about this, other communities are planning to manipulate the black community and use black elected officials to do it. And having meetings about this, having roundtable discussions, having Jewish rabbis say, well, if this backfires, it'll look bad on our community. Look at the discussion around this. You're not at this table here in Detroit. Detroit is a city that's 83% black. They're talking about you. They're talking about manipulating you and using some of these people like these Martha Fudge types and the guy in Baltimore types and the Cory Booker types and the Kamala Harris types to do it. They're talking about manipulating you. I mean, what can you say, Richard?
You can't say anything to what they're doing. You know, as you were going through that, it reminded me, you know, and for some reason it sticks vividly, around, again, Cynthia McKinney, because the same type of approach, I mean, once that she became outspoken in the manner that she was, and dead on point, and had a public opinion, her constituency public opinion in her favor. I mean, they went all out to get her out of that seat.
Well, you can see that they plan to go all out now to get at least those two. Right. They ain't mentioning right. the other two yet. Because they're not as vocal, Ocasio-Cortez and Bob Presley out of Massachusetts. They're not as vocal, even though they're considered part of this quote-unquote squad. But they are really targeting these other two women.
And primarily because their constituency base, and you know, because their foreign policy position has value. I mean, it speaks to the universal value and supposedly the value of the American empire. So, you know, and you heard me say that it's supposed to be the value of the American. We talked about earlier about white hegemony, you know, being expanding itself, because when they expand themselves, they say that this is the right way to do it. What you're doing is wrong. Anything you do is wrong. You're supposed to be doing this practice. Well, here are two people who are saying, well, if that's the American value and you're looking at the situation in this country, and whether you look at it from a cultural, religious perspective, being Islamic, or you look at it from a or a nation state, Palestinian government and the Israeli government and them being in the same territory, there's no way you can say that this represents what you claim to be American value, the American nation state value. When you're seeing them outwardly, the Jewish state outwardly slaughtering people and encroaching, not encroaching. We talk about gentrification here. What they're doing is full scale, you know, what they did here to the Native American populations, those different nations that existed here, total takeover. When you talk about building on the West Bank and expanding in spite of borders.
And keep in mind too, Richard, it's not just Palestinians that are suffering the brunt over there. You have Afro-Palestinians.
Yeah.
You have American Ethiopian Hebrews that went over there, and you have Ethiopian Jews or Hebrews that are over there that are suffering the same thing. They built that they call it a detainment camp that a lot of them are housed in. So it's not just Palestinians that's feeling the apartheid brunt of what's going on. But it's strange that under this attack for these two women, and it's not strange, because I'm trying to give the Time for Awakening audience a background to why these black representatives that represent black folks in these districts are not saying anything. We see why on one of these articles that we just talked about, they're not saying anything in reference to what's happening.
And it's not new. That's, you know.
It might not be new to you, Richard, but maybe it's new to some folks out there listening, because some people might be under the illusion that these people represent us. You heard when you gave the example with the brother Thought about the Civil War. Some people might be under the illusion that these people represent us, but they don't represent you. And we see what's going on. The manipulation of the community, the planning. So make a scorecard. Just keep in mind this person that they want to run against, Rashida Tlaib. See if that materializes. See if this woman, Bridget Jones, pops up and says, I'm running again. She might have unlimited coffers, according to these articles. And something more important, Richard. Because if the Time for Awakening audience tries to pull up this article, it was originally in the Detroit Times or Metro Times. If you go to that site, the article is disabled. It's a big oops across the screen. Then there was another site that I had shared, which you, of course, almost an hour after it appeared in the Detroit Metro, it was gone. That other site that I text to you, that's gone. So I had to pull it up on this Palestinian portal. But the thing is this, Richard. It's evident that they had somebody leaked this story to them. It was some spies there. They talked about the meeting, who spoke. Did you notice that in that article?
No, yeah, yeah.
You know, our people are in basically a war. We've always been at odds with the government of this country and with this country. Where's our spies? Where's our spook that sat by the door, so to speak, to come back and inform the community of what's being said at these so-called hallowed halls and at these meetings? They don't say nothing unless they're instructed. Let's go to North Carolina to Scotty's here. Scotty.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
How are you, sir?
Hey, what's up now?
Hey, I'm doing okay, man. I'm glad you mentioned them Afro-Palestinians, man, because some of our people, man, you know, Malcolm X said Zionism is racism. We're talking about white supremacy. Just throw the label Jew out of it. We're talking white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Israel is a white supremacist nation, and it's evident, as I shared on your program before, and people can look it up, of the mistreatment of the black Jews from Ethiopia. But, you know, when it comes to the Palestinians, all we see on TV is them Arab, you know, Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
But I go, you know, I have a bunch of news sources, too. And I follow, like, you know, this Palestinian website. I've been following it for years, right? And I've seen some pictures and stuff where they had actually interviewed an Afro-Palestinian. And so instead of some of us, and it's not just us, so let me just not put a color on it. But some people, they only stand for justice when it's getting justice for themselves. When it comes to injustices of someone else, you want to turn a blind eye to it. But then you wonder why, then you complain when nobody paying attention and you not getting justice. Am I making any sense, or am I?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and so that's something I noticed with some of us. We don't care about injustices happening to other people. We too busy trying to get justice for ourselves. Well, you know, my study of people like Malcolm X, I was just watching Fred Hampton, where he was talking about racism and black capitalism and what have you. You know, they have always stood on the side of justice, no matter who it was. You know, I mean, what did King say about a threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so, you know, some of us think that, oh, we ain't got no dog in the fight. Well, you know, Israel get a couple of billion a year, every year. How do you feel about your reparations money going to a white supremacist nation to oppress non-white people? I would have something to say about that to my representatives and what have you, like you mentioned in these representatives. I think, though, are you talking about this woman, this black woman might try to primary? Is she a Democrat as well, trying to primary Rashida Tlaib?
Well, I think that it said here that these Jewish organizations are going to get behind. See, Rashida Tlaib defeated this woman. They claim that she didn't get a overwhelming majority when she defeated her.
Is this in a primary or election? Is this other woman a Republican? Or
no,
a
she's a Democrat. She's a Democrat.
So we're talking primaries then.
Yeah.
We're not talking general.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she got defeated in the Democratic primary. And so now some of those Israelis in Michigan is talking about backing this woman she defeated again. And, you know, what they're going to do, man, is just run a whole bunch of disinformation. They'll buy media on whatever black radio stations, which it can't be that many in Detroit. But, you know, you'll see billboards and they'll run a disinformation program. And because now I would just look, I'm not into stereotypes and stuff, but some stuff is just true. When people talk about the Jewish control of the media. That's the first thing I thought about when you talked about how these two articles on these U.S.-based websites just went missing. You know, that's what I thought about. You had to go outside the country to find the article. I tell you, man, that's why what you're doing, Elliot, what we're doing with Black Talk Radio Network is very important, man, because, our people are just not going to get those sort of political analysis, man. They just not, unless it comes from us, man. And again, I want to reiterate, we need to start primarying people. We need to train young people, you know what I'm saying, young people and primary people like these cats been in there for a decade or more. You know, John Lewis need to go sit down and retire somewhere and enjoy his old age, because he certainly ain't doing nothing to advance justice in this country, man. And you mentioned that woman's name I was telling you about from Charlotte. Alma Adams is her name. She need to be primary, man. There's a lot of them. But that's all I wanted to share, man. I'll continue to listen.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon. Let me read the last statement here on this, in this article here. It says, let's be clear, conservative suburban Jewish leaders right here and across the nation are planning to meddle in an area election to oust a Muslim girl and take action by pitting black individuals in opposition to an Arab individual. They are morally bankrupt. Remember the fact that pro-Israel foyer and suburban Jews don't care in regards to the black Detroiters. They're trying to arrange in opposition to Tlaib. Does the pro-Israel foyer, JTA, or any other outlet interview take difficulty on how Tlaib serves her neighborhood? There's no point of that here in this article. Possibly the result of, well, I don't want to continue, but it just mentioned how they're saying that that these Jewish representatives are planning to manipulate black Detroiters against Tlaib because of her stance against Israel. So evidently, the one that they're planning to back has a stance similar to this Martha Fudge, where she hasn't seen anybody that objects to Israel. I mean, how can you? I just go back to that statement. How can you say anything so ludicrous and stupid, Richard? Some of these people must have fell out of, dropped up, of rocks must have fell on their head or been hit upside the head with a brick. Let's go to 440. 440?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hi. How are you doing tonight?
Great.
I just wanted to give a thanks for you bringing up that article about Representative Fudge. Cause I had no idea, you know what I'm saying? Like, this, I kind of mentioned this the last time I called, is that this is what they do. They go and target, you know, people who are like, just like young and relatively, you know, novice on just like the world. And this is, like you said, is a city of 93% black. And it's just like, they'll swoop in and go after the leaders. They, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
well, she's not young.
It's like they go out of their way. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the type of stuff that, like, when you look, when you try to balance the equation, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's all hypocrisy. It's all projection. But it's like, how can she be niche? You know, these people are crafting people. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They only need a minority. You know what I'm saying? It's like, just dig out the math real quick. There's like 365 days in a year, right? If you put out some nonsense one day, every day for a year, that's only, you know what I'm saying? That's over a span of like, 4 years. That's what, you understand the math. It's like 1,300 pieces of nonsense. If you follow me, you don't have to do a lot to just confound people. You don't have to be elaborate. You just put out a little spin every day. And then what happens is you have these leaders who aren't really realizing the bigger picture, how, like, people move around and, like, it's like people talk in code in plain sight. You know what I'm saying? The language that is that media uses against people and against black people's interests is so, like, so bold and so in our face. But we as a people don't have enough sense to really look at, you know, what they're saying and look at actions and look at the nuance. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's one of those things that really, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up. I don't want to talk too long, but, like, everything that you said in that article and everything that you had pointed out, I think is absolutely true. And, like, you know, I know that, you know, political representation, I really feel like it's not really our best aim, because just like when we're in office, we really don't, if we don't have our business interests, you know what I'm saying, our relative districts, and, you know, in the relative political processes, we can't do anything. That just ties in to what you were saying, you know, what you were talking about with the loans, and we can't get any money. You know, everything's based on business. You know, business, you know, moves up politics. You got to have money to do a lot of this stuff. It's the way that you get outsider money to come in and cherry pick, you know, our people to have our people be their mouthpieces. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you and brother Elliot. You have a good night, and thank you for your program.
Peace. Thanks for your call, bro.
Take it. Take it now.
Richard, you know, that article speaks for itself, man. What we need to do is keep a scorecard. For those that don't live in that Detroit area, keep a scorecard on what's going on there. When you see these names pop up again, then you know who these people are. We can't be ignorant of people that's enemies or masquerading as friends. You know, that happened before in history. People would be working for the FBI and go around to different groups and do damage because people didn't know who they were. Their name might have been changed or things of that nature. But see, now you don't know, because the information is not out there. When that article hit the Detroit Free Press, it was less than 2 hours before it was taken down. You can't even, if you Google the article, you won't see it. And then the other link that I shared with you where the guy had the article up, that's down. But it's not a false article, because even Rashida Tlaib responded to it. So it's not a false article. It's not an internet fable or lie. And the people named in the article is not false or don't exist. I mean, you had, it said it was a cross-section of Jewish leaders, business leaders, community leaders, well, no, black community leaders. Detroit is 83% black. It was Jewish community leaders. They don't live in Detroit. They live in suburbs of Detroit, but they wanted to control the Detroit politics and control people that stand before you.
And that's what I call social capital.
Yeah, well.
George Frazier calls it network. Because it's, you know, sort of, you know, and what I continually want to bring up is that we until we can have in place, whether by people assemblies or some other mechanism, to create those kind of networks, i.e. social capital, then we won't have the political force. I mean, we can have all the information we want about what they're doing, but that doesn't change them their ability to do it until we do something to prevent it. And as you said, you know, look, going to that article on business, you know, there's a correlation and tie of the decline of black businesses when it said 72, and the decline and the support for Israel amongst black political representatives since 72. There's, you know, I mean, we have, when we make these.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about it like that, Richard. I didn't even, you know, draw that comparison.
and which means the, you know, the sustainability. And this, you know, for me, I mean, the context of how, why we have to be and why we have to get busy. And it is a particular slice and, you know, that has to get busy because, as you said, until we, whether we create the governance mechanism to even identify the right candidate, as Scotty said, in order to want to place them to be able to run in the primaries, we're still at a disadvantage talking about what they're doing, which they're not doing anything they haven't been doing to maintain white hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, so to for us, it's constantly, you know, true making clear of the moves, because at this point, they're just, I mean, like you said, whoever leaked that information and call it late. And again, as Scotty said, not only leaked it, but that on the other side, they had the ability to pull it, you know, before. And we're talking about Facebook having the ability to put certain information on Facebook. They'll pull it. So where is our ability to communicate what we know our value and our interest is from a geopolitical, from a national political, from a local, because Babe is being selected from a local political position, right? She a council person. The other one you mentioned was a mayor. And that obviously that was a strategic plan looking out, because the one that was a mayor, that to have her run, they're saying that they propped that person years before she actually ran.
Yeah.
Which means they identified that person.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Just like they identified this woman Jones. She's been identified. They said they're going to give her money.
Right.
And they said that the black community will get behind one candidate. They already assessing your mentality. How you going to think? What kind of way? Boy, I'm telling you.
Or as his brother is saying, being able to put a certain amount of messaging on a regular basis, it don't have to be a lot, in order to make you accept that person.
Yeah.
Over, you know, and as you say, by eliminating the black press, the black communication outlets, or not having enough people triangulate the message about not just what's going on, but who did we select to replace any one of those people? If they selecting people, you know, and in our moment right now, who do we say that we selected? We're saying who we're looking for someone to step up. And I ain't waiting for somebody to step up. I'm looking for somebody to put them on the step.
Wow.
One is control and one is actually waiting to be controlled.
Yeah.
And until we take control, we can't expect anything different. I think that ties to sovereign thinking.
Yeah, well, according to these people, we're waiting to be controlled.
Right.
According to these people. Now, some black folks might consider that an insult, but according to these people, oh, those people just waiting to be controlled. Let's cultivate somebody to control them. you want to take one more, Richard?
Okay.
Let's go to 215. 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. How y'all doing?
How are you, sir?
I'm glad your brother's doing well. I had to make a confession, Brother Elliot and Richard. I just got in. I just turned y'all on because my cousin was treating me for my birthday's back on the 29th. He was treating belated birthday celebration. So he just came back. I just came back in from that. But I'm glad y'all was talking about the politicians because early today, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, into the time from the Wiccan Listener Ordinance, I was down 6th and Market with Brother Michael Cord. Had a beautiful celebration about, you know, about the enslaved ancestors and stuff. Cause like you said, I like to say not slaved, they were enslaved by these Europeans. And it was so beautiful, Brother Allen Rich. I wish I could have seen the beautiful young black men and black girls holding all the different sides from 16, 19, 70, 77 to 17, 76 and beyond, all the different years they was enslaved under Europeans and stuff. It was beautiful, man. It was so, it brought tears to my eyes, Brother Ellen Rick. It was so nice, man. It was just so beautiful. Remember, y'all probably still in the news now, when your local news at 11, okay? So if y'all get a chance, check that out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It was a beautiful affair, it really was. And speaking of politicians, I just want to remember I ran into Brother Tim Hanna down there, too. Me and Tim was talking and stuff. I stayed down there with Tim before I had to leave. And Tim will tell you this, Elliot and Richard, y'all favorite congressman, I'm being facetious now, y'all favorite congressman, Dwight Evans, was there. And he had the nerve to be standing next to us. And Tim will tell you, I put him on blast. I said, Congressman Evans, I said, when is you and your ilk is going to get some courage to stand up for them four sisters, Sister Omar Tlaib, Liana Presley, and Cortez? I said, especially the two Muslim sisters being attacked by these Zionists. I said, y'all sit back here while they trash out people, call people all kinds of names. I said, but y'all don't say nothing. I said, when that Jewish rabbi called black people monkeys, I said, you, Congressman Evans, you didn't say a word. Guess what that Negro had another tell me, Ellen Mitchell? He says, oh, we said something. We just said it privately. I said, I'll be damned. I said, well, I don't want to hurt
what?
You saying it privately.
That's what
he said. He said, we condemned it. We condemned it behind the scenes. I said, no. I said,
no. Wait a minute, Joe. What was his exact words?
He said, we did it behind the scenes. We did it, privately.
And then wait a minute, hold on a second.
Who they were talking to?
That's what Richard. Listen, that's what I just told you, Richard. I don't know whether these guys have been hitting the head with a brick, fell down and bumped their head. What kind of stupid response? That's just like the response that woman had in Ohio, talking about she never seen any black person that objected to Israel. What kind of dumb response is that? We said it privately. These other people are making public statements.
Exactly. And, well, Brother Elliot, Tim will tell you, and I put him on blast. I said, well, I tell you what, Congressman Evans, from now on, from this point forward, I want to see you and members of that Congressional Black Caucus, when they come out there and call these women all kinds of names, they trash the minister, I want y'all to stand up publicly. Guess what he told me, Elliot and Richard? I will. So I said, I'm going to hold you that, too. And you know me, Elliot, I'm going to hold him to that, too. So when it happens again, and you know it will, if that nigga don't open up his mouth, I'm going to be right on the terrestrial radio station. I'm going to blast his behind. You know I will, Elliot. I just want to look. That's why I had to share that with you and Richard tonight. I put that sucker on blast. I said, Congressman Evans, you guys going to have to stand up. I don't want to hear that stuff about you saying something privately. I said, because I don't know whether you say anything or not. Say it publicly. Because like you said, Elliot, these people say public things about our people. They don't say it privately. You know what I mean? Like the ministers say, if you say something against me in the public, I'm gonna condemn you and speak out against you. I'm not gonna do it in private. He said, if you would have did it in private, then I'll deal with you in private. When you say something publicly, I'm gonna deal with you publicly. Simple as that. You know what I mean? But yeah, I just had to let y'all brothers know, man. I put Edmonds on blast today, man. He think he gonna sneak down there, because you know that's how I slammed it. He wanna sneak down there and show his face at a black event, so then black folks will get on the radio and say, oh, Carmen Evans, damn, he was down here today. Now you ain't gonna get away with that stuff, sucker. I made sure that I put him on blast today, brothers.
Talk to you later.
You know what I mean? Hey, thanks for taking it, Brother Allen. Richard, peace, good brothers.
All right now.
Wow. We said it privately. Richard, before we leave, let me say something, because the caller, Joe, mentioned something about the two Muslim women. And certainly their religion is Islam or being Muslim. But these people, and the folks that have this organizing this meeting in Detroit, they're not necessarily looking at that as being Muslim. And let me read to you the statement that was leaked to this Palestinian portal. And what was stated at that meeting. The Jewish Telegraph Agency last week arranged a meeting with leading Jewish organizations at which they vowed to raise money to get rid of, Tlaib because of her support and supports of boycotts of Israel. One of the statements made at the meeting, Tlaib is a woman of color, a Palestinian American. The commentary at the meeting included race-tinged language. Now, wait a minute, Richard. You got so-called powerful Jews in Detroit business leaders, community leaders, rabbis. Did it say that? Richard, are you there?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The mic went off.
Okay. Now, it mentioned in the article that it was business leaders there, community leaders, and rabbis, right?
Right.
But it's stated here that the commentary at the museum, excuse me, at the meeting, included race-tinged language. You can imagine what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And it says one person saying the darker one, referring to Talib, the darker one. So they ain't talking about the woman necessarily being no Muslim. They consider all them women black. I don't know what they consider about the Puerto Rican sister, but they considered all those other women as black. They ain't necessarily looking at no religion, whether they was atheists. They don't care. If they was for that BDS, they're an enemy to them. They could be Muslim, Christian, Jehovah Witness, atheist. You heard the language at the table. According to this person that leaked this story, it was full of race-tinged language. And it says one person at the meeting said the darker one, referring to Talib. Well, I guess they could be referring to Talib or Ilhan Omar.
Mm-hmm.
Race-tinged language. I wish they did. Boy, I'm telling you. Well, listen. Maybe they'll continue this conversation on one of those terrestrial programs tomorrow, like the guy that comes on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon here in Philadelphia. Maybe this language will be talked about on there, some of these stories. Instead of talking about Donald Trump every day, who cares about that fool and what he's saying? What we need to do is what we have to do, which don't include worrying about Donald Trump. Sure, we can comment on some of the stupid things he says and how it affects us, but we should be making plans similar to getting these people out from under influencing our communities.
Say speaking in private, condemning something in private.
Come on. If they want to be a mouthpiece for Israel, then be a mouthpiece for Israel. That don't have nothing to do with us. How long are they going to last if they're no use to them in regards to the black community? Why don't they move out of the black community and move to a Jewish neighborhood and run as a representative? See how long that lasts. If they want to represent Israel, fine. Move to a Jewish community. Move to Israel, run for office. Their political career wouldn't last long.
Mm.
You're only useful to them because you're here. You're among other black people, and you're a useful tool. They lucky I wasn't down there, Richard, to hear something dumb like that stated out of that man's mouth. But it's not surprising because you just heard what this woman, Martha Fudge, said in a published report about she never ran across any blacks that was against Israel. Listening audience, that's some of your representatives. That's the people that represent you. If you're happy with that, then just keep doing what you're doing. You'll hear these stories on Time for Awakening. Maybe you'll hear them on Tom Joyner. Maybe you'll hear them on Steve Harvey. Maybe you'll hear it on Al Sharpton. Maybe you'll hear it on that other guy that comes on the the Golden Eagle or whatever his name is. Maybe you'll hear these stories on there where they'll talk about their friends. You don't hear them talking about their political friends, black friends, because they're friends of theirs. And they're tied into the Democratic Party. And they probably get money from some of these organizations we're talking about. So you're not going to hear them be critical or say anything about them. And plus, with this law that's been passed by the Black Caucus and others about coming against anybody with anti-BDS language, then you really ain't going to hear them say anything about it.
That's a fact.
Yeah, so, listen, the struggle continues. Richard will be probably have a guest next week, so we'll be kind of back onto our routine. I know we have special guests coming up in a couple of weeks, so we'll kind of put those things out there. I got to start putting together a little calendar and putting it on the Time for Awakening site of some upcoming guests instead of me just arranging it and just putting it out there the day of or the day before. Well, we'll get it together. Listen, before we leave today, I want to give the lineup for this week and every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting conversation on African Perspectives from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Mondays and Wednesdays from 1 to 3, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. From 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. I don't know whether the folks missed it last week, but on every first and third Friday, Conversation Reparations within Cobra is from 9 to 10 on Time for Awakening. And then after that, from 10 to 12, Mondays through Fridays, is the Warren Valentine Show on evenings from 10 to 12, Night Talk, Warren Valentine Podcast on Time for Awakening Media. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for An Awakening Media. And on Friday, Time for An Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for An Awakening Media. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. save the children. To save the children.